Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
We're on a new day.
Yes.
Thursday at 2.
Or close to 2.
Thanks for tuning in. And, yes. You know, you can always hear this on iTunes and on the website archive.
We are broadcasting from two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. And there is still, on top of this container, a garden that produces food for the restaurant. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the gardeners, garden designers, and ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in and around New York City. And this show, We Dig Plants, aims to bring the culture to horticulture. Now, Alice, I have a trivia question for you.
Okay.
Do you know what I was doing almost exactly 2 months ago to the day?
I have no idea.
I was rescuing squashes. Let me elaborate. It was August 26th, the day before Hurricane Irene was going to slam into New York and wreak its devastation on our city. Everyone was getting ready, filling sandbags, tying down their outdoor furniture, loading up on batteries and water. And on that day, my husband Robin and I were helping my mom cut down her giant prize squashes before the storm. Of course, we also helped remove her furniture and all the other possible flying objects around her house.
I harvested my corn.
Yeah. But my mom's first priority was making sure that those squashes, which subsequently won her several blue ribbons, did not fall off the pergola that they were growing on.
Sure.
Now, I didn't get it at the time. I was like, my dad's in the hospital recovering from surgery. A storm of epic proportions is headed our way, like potentially endangering many lives or at least flooding our homes. And she was worried about squashes, Alice.
Well, today we're going to talk about the insanity of squashes and pumpkins and gourds. And we have an amazing guest who wrote a fantastic book. Susan Warren is our guest, and the book's title is Backyard Giants. And it's all about competitive vegetable growers, particularly pumpkins, and their drive to grow the biggest pumpkins at all costs. Welcome, Susan.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. So how many seeds are in a pumpkin, Susan?
Oh, that varies quite a bit. And it is a question that every grower anticipates when they crack out their crack open their pumpkin. It can be quite valuable, each seed. So they hope for hundreds. They might have 300 or 400. They might just have a handful. Some of them don't always mature. Some of them go bad. It's really the great unknown when that pumpkin is still all sealed up.
Exactly.
I know, and that's what I found so interesting in the book when I read it. I had read that some of the seeds go for $400 or more, and you just don't know if that seed's going to germinate or not. To me, it seemed like it was tulip mania, you know, 17th century tulip mania all over again.
Well, you know, it's not just the seed, of course.
Right.
It's the promise of glory. It's the promise of an entire year of hard work and labor and accomplishing a dream. So the seeds that are most valuable are the ones that contain the prime genetics that they hope will help them accomplish their goal.
Right. It was really fun in the book to read about just all the different seed kind of genetics and the strains and, you know, which were more profitable than others and the 1068 versus the 1248 or,
you know. And it was also very suggestive, I thought. When I was reading it, I was like, this is a book about pumpkins. And, you know, they're talking about, and then he exposes the male, you know, part. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So tell us about that process a little bit. Tell our listeners about the killer cross, how they do that, how the growers do that.
Right. Well, you know, to get a pumpkin, you have to have sex. It's the birds and the bees, right?
Uh-huh.
That's how we're all made, and it works no differently for plants. With a pumpkin, you do have very distinct male and female flowers. You'll see this on your squashes, on your gourds. And it's a process of pollinating the female with the pollen from the male.
Mm-hmm.
And in the giant pumpkins, of course, the bigger they get, the more, shall we say, life size they become. Mm-hmm. And it can be very almost erotic to watch these guys pollinate their pumpkins.
Right.
And of course, it generates a tremendous amount of humor.
Sure.
as they do this. But it's a process that is key to the entire season. If they don't get that pumpkin pollinated, then they're not going to have a pumpkin. And it has to be a very controlled process. They can't let the birds or the bees into the garden to do this for them, like nature usually takes care of it.
Yeah.
Not with their pumpkins. They have to know exactly what genetics are going, and they cross different plants. And that's where you get the idea of a killer cross. It's if you have a plant that you know is going to produce a pumpkin that's really, really large, but maybe it has a big cavity inside of it, which means it'll be lighter. Because in the world of competitive growing for pumpkins, it's not just literally the size, it's the weight. And that's the most definitive measure that they go by. So they're not only looking for the immensity of the vegetable, they're looking for, and this, they're fruits, by the way,
right.
But they're not only looking for the immensity of it, they're looking for the density. And so you might cross a very large growing fruit with a very densely growing fruit with a smaller cavity and thicker flesh. So they're always looking for the ways to get their pumpkins bigger and heavier.
So let's talk about, the book was written in 2007, right? But let's talk, is that right, Susan?
It was the 2006 growing season.
Okay, right. And then it came out in 2007.
Correct.
But since then, in the book, the prized weight was 1,400 pounds, I believe.
They were aiming for 1,500,
for 1,500. But now they're up to 2,000, is that right?
They haven't quite cracked 2,000. That's going to be a big day when they get to, that's a ton.
Right.
That's the one-ton pumpkin. It seemed, just 10 years ago, it seemed beyond the imagination that they could get a pumpkin to weigh one ton. When I wrote the book, the real stretch goal was 1,500 pounds. A three-quarter ton pumpkin was the goal. And it is amazing how these amateur gardeners have been so successful with crossing and breeding these plants and all the different techniques that they use to cultivate them and to make the pumpkin grow larger.
I know, I was fascinated.
You could write a book about it.
Yeah.
There are so many different things that they do with these plants to get the pumpkins large that they succeed in adding 50, 100 pounds every year to that total. This year, I will say, without giving away the specific outcome of the growers in my book, the goal then was 1,500. This year, they had 35 pumpkins come in over 1,500 pounds, and the top one was, I believe, 1,818.
1,818.
So, that's amazing.
Getting
so
close, yes. But not there yet.
So let's talk a little bit about just the logistics of growing the pumpkin and then getting it to the competition, because that was fascinating to me, and I think it would probably be interesting to our listeners too.
Well, growing the pumpkin starts with germinating the seed and getting that seed that you might have paid hundreds of dollars for its prime genetics, getting it to sprout. There's many different methods for sprouting your seeds, getting it into the ground, preparing the soil.
Mm-hmm.
These guys go berserk over just planning out and testing their soil and adding supplements to the soil, minerals and making sure the acidity is at the correct level. Everything has to be perfect for this pumpkin.
Right, and which kinds of compost they're using, and everybody's got their own kind of secret method.
Of course, manure is the gold standard.
Right.
And so the different kinds of manure are as infinite as the kinds of animals that produce it.
Right, there was chicken versus pig versus, you know.
One guy swore by mink manure because he lived next to a fur farm.
Okay.
So everyone has their like special recipe that they
right.
think is the magic bullet for them, but they're really just going. It's a chemical analysis, and
uh-huh.
so it's actually very scientific. And these guys are amateur scientists in the garden. Once you get the soil right, once you get that pumpkin growing, these things are huge. Not only is the pumpkin that they grow big, but the plants themselves are gigantic to support that growth.
Right.
And so you have leaves in a mature plant that are as large as an elephant ear, and of course hundreds of leaves. The size of the plant itself is going to be larger than your average New York apartment. It's going to be 1,000 square feet, 1,500 square feet
per
if you're really
plant.
Growing them large.
Right, per
And they
plant.
Don't grow very many of them. I mean, what I was reading in the books is most people grow between three and 10 pumpkins, right? 3 to 10 plants. For competition, right? And then pick the one that obviously they anticipate is going to be the biggest, right?
Yes, exactly. And so you're investing a lot because each plant is only going to support one pumpkin. And you might pollinate two or three, and then you're eyeballing that pumpkin and saying, which one is going
right.
to be my prize winner?
And then you're picking
which
off
one
the
is going to come
smaller
out the
ones so that it puts the energy into the larger one.
And those pumpkins need a lot of water and nutrients. I mean, they suck that soil dry, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. There are, again, differing techniques on watering. Some people swear by watering every day. Some want the soil to dry out in between. But it's no question just many, many, many gallons of water every day on each plant. Pumpkins are made up of a lot of moisture. The danger with doing this is that the pumpkins will actually grow too fast. It's very easy for pumpkins at their prime growth period in late July, early August, to put on 30 or 40 pounds a day.
I know.
As one grower told me, how would you feel if you were putting on 34 or 40 pounds a day?
I'm pregnant right now, and I'm gaining, a half a pound a week, and that's too much for, you know? I can't imagine being a pumpkin.
Yeah, it was pretty astounding, and it's only in 5 months. I mean, isn't it about 5 months from germination to way off season?
Even less. More like 3 months is the actual growing period. They're pollinating around the early July.
Wow.
Because they're planting in May. They're getting that plant mature enough to start supporting pumpkins, and then they get the flowers. Then they pollinate around the 1st of July. And they're growing in July, August, and in September, they're mostly through with the growing. At that point, they're just tending the plant. August is one of the most dramatic periods in the garden for these growers. It's when their plants, their pumpkins explode
mm-hmm.
because they're growing so fast. They'll walk out and they'll be cracked open.
Right. Heartbreaking.
It's when all kinds of problems, it's the prime point for disease. They have poured on so much fertilizer and fungicide and chemicals and water onto these plants. A big thunderstorm literally can make the difference in your season because a tremendous amount of water all at once can make them literally absorb too much and explode.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
you know,
and that is a bad day in the garden.
Yeah, especially because of all the money and the time and the resources you've put in. However, if you win, there are some big fat prizes, not only fat pumpkins, but there are some big fat prizes to be had, right? $250,000, et cetera?
Well,
in some cases,
you know, that's really not why they do it. Sure, they love to get some of their investment back.
Right.
But it depends. You know, you can take a pumpkin. I think you're allowed one way off per pumpkin. So they strategize on which pumpkin they'll take off, take a pumpkin to. And there's many, many way off scattered around New England and the West Coast. We're in the prime growing territory. It's really a sort of northern half of the U.S.
Right.
that supports the competitive pumpkins. Below that, you don't you don't have the right growing conditions to get the really real giants. And so you can, if you grow 10 pumpkins, you go to 10 way-offs. But, you know, you're not going to win every one of those.
No.
And the money is, you know, a $250,000 prize would be quite the exception. It's really maybe a $5,000 or something for a really good return. Doesn't come close to the investment these guys make.
Well, it sounds like they're, you know, these are, like you said, they're amateurs. They have, you know, most of them are have full-time jobs or, you know, other life responsibilities. So they're really doing it for the passion of it, not the money. They're just doing it for the pride, you know?
Right, and the love and the passion and the community and camaraderie and friendship that you get from such types of obsessions.
And I want to talk about this a little bit more. We have to take a little bit of a break. You've been listening to We Dig Plants. Come back and we'll have Susan Warren back to talk more about these backyard giants.
Welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to Susan Warren. She's our guest today. We're talking about pumpkins and giant pumpkin growing. That was a song called Pumpkin Pie by Kid Congo.
That's great.
And the Pink Monkey Birds. Carmen, why don't you talk a little bit about Susan as a gardener?
Well, Susan Warren started out, has been a lifelong journalist, starting out in Houston for the Houston Chronicle, then working overseas covering the first Persian Gulf War, and then on to the Wall Street Journal for 15 years, where she was a reporter and editor in Dallas covering the oil and natural gas industry. Now Susan divides her time between her work for Bloomberg News in Dallas and her garden. So Susan, how did that translate into a book about giant pumpkins?
Well, you know, I had the luxury when I was working at the Wall Street Journal of looking around for story ideas, and occasionally I would find story ideas in my private life and the things and the experiences of just living my life. And one of the things that I had been trying to do in my garden was grow some gourds, and there had been a cross inadvertently made between two plants that I was growing in my own garden. And so I got online and started investigating how this whole pollination thing worked and crossing gourd plants. And everything I came up with in my searches was all about these giant pumpkins. And I just became fascinated. It doesn't take long to detect the story behind these pumpkins and the amount of effort and the amount of obsession that these people put into it. And these people have day jobs. You know, they're professionals, they're airline pilots, they're country club managers, they're engineers, and then they go home and they spend hours and hours more in the garden. And I wanted to write about that experience, and it was around Halloween, so who doesn't want to read a story about a pumpkin around Halloween?
Right.
And that's how I first found Ron and Dick Wallace in Rhode Island, a father and son pair who compete with the giant pumpkins.
Yeah, they were really fascinating. I found them, I guess they were kind of the main protagonist in the book, or at least their story sort of was a thread throughout the entire book. Can you tell us a little bit more about their $250,000 pumpkin patch, as they described it, and their holy grail of pumpkin growing?
Well, like most growers, every year is not successful, and they had been trying almost 10, 15 years to get the world record. I mean, that is what these guys want to do. They want to go down in the record books. They're very competitive people. They don't just love gardening and enjoy it. They just want to win. You know, they want to be the person who grows the biggest pumpkin the world has ever seen.
Yeah, it made me want to do it, too. The book is infectious.
And they can. You know, it's within their reach.
Yeah.
But year after year, they fell. Sometimes they came so close, you know, within 100 pounds of the winner, and bitter disappointments year after year. And I was very moved by Ron and Dick. They had a great relationship, a father and son relationship. They both really supported each other. They were a team in the garden, and how they divided things and shared the work, and yet they each kind of had their own pumpkins that they worked on each year and took possession of in the garden. They just seemed like the perfect vehicle to follow as they tried yet another year to be the record winners. And part of their dream the year I wrote the book was in expanding their garden, because they'd had so many failures. Their dirt had become too rich and too infested with bacteria. So they were having a lot of pumpkins go down to disease. So they needed a new garden. So they bought, you know, another
parcel of land. A
couple of acres of land right adjacent to their house. It just, a little bit of serendipity. They just happened to have this land go on sale, and it was, to him, the perfect opportunity.
Destiny.
To expand the
it
garden.
Was destiny.
So tell us, Susan, then, like, so say you've got this, you know, pumpkin that you think is worthy of way off. How do you get it physically to the way off? I love that part in the book, if you could tell our listeners.
Oh, there are so many machines that they've developed. In the early days of the giant pumpkins, you had special tarps with handles, and you would just kind of ease the pumpkin over onto the tarp. Now, don't forget, these are fragile. They may weigh more than 1,000 pounds, but they're still, you know, plant flesh, and they can break. They can crack, and once that skin is broken, they are no longer eligible for the way off.
Right.
So this is a very delicate process, and one in which they are, you know, very anxiety producing for the growers. They used to be able to ease it onto a tarp, hand carry it to the back of their pickup truck. But these things have gotten so darn big now.
A 2,000 pound pumpkin. How are you going to maneuver that?
Yeah, it's like building the Great Pyramid. You have to get a special pulley system to a tripod that they erect over the pumpkin, and they have a special harness that fits over the pumpkin and like a net that they cinch tight, and then they winch up the pumpkin literally inch by inch off the ground after it's been cut off the vine, and then they bring the truck in underneath it. Some growers actually use a tractor to come in on and lift the pumpkin onto a pallet and move it onto a truck or a trailer bed. Then they have to reinforce it to make sure it's not going to roll or rock or hit against the side of anything and break on the way to the way off.
Isn't it true, Susan, that if there's a hole, the reason they don't accept cracked pumpkins anymore is because people were filling them with water, because, as you said, it's not the size, it's the weight. So if they found ones that were cracked, there was potential that the person who was competing was filling it with something heavy, like water or something else.
Yes, there are stories told about a few people who thought they would kind of improve their chances at the way-off scale.
There's
by
always a bad apple.
injecting their pumpkins with concrete, you know, the heavier
concrete.
The better.
It made me want to, when I was reading the transportation information in your book, I wanted to take a Xanax. I was so nervous thinking about, you know, all that time and research, and, you know, Carmen and I are gardeners, and we install perennials, and, you know, we love to watch them grow. That's why we're gardeners. And then, you know, when something happens to it, you're just heartbroken. And that's just a flower for us.
Well, we also have to talk about, we do lift heavy things.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of time we have to lift trees on roofs. We have to move tens of thousands of pounds of soil. And it's really fascinating. It was really fascinating to read about it.
Yeah.
And also there's some great pictures in the book too, uh-huh, of the process, which I found really, really interesting. But before the pumpkin even gets to the weigh off, we talked a little bit about weather, which gardeners of course are obsessed about, when so much is at stake. But you can't do anything much about that. But there's also the, what you described in the book, Susan, as botanical predators. Can you tell our listeners about the San Diego grower who went to some, what I thought were some extremes to protect his pumpkins?
Well, there's lots of things that can go wrong in the garden. There's certainly disease. The pumpkins can be attacked by bacteria or fungus. You have chemicals for that, right? So they can go out and they spray their plants every week, and they can keep that under relatively good control. There are insects as well, which you attack with pesticides, that, you know, a swarm of cucumber beetles or could come in overnight and strip your plant. So it's an ongoing battle that they wage against different kinds of vermin and fungus. But there's bigger mammals that, mm-hmm, they have to worry about too. Mm-hmm. There's deers, there's woodchucks, there's gophers. Often these kind of animals like to nibble on the most succulent part of the plant, which is the new growth that creates the baby pumpkins. Mm-hmm. And you can literally terminate the growth of a plant by nibbling off the end early in the season.
Right.
And so these guys get homicidal, I guess, about protecting their plants. They are not going to allow an animal, after all they've invested and all the time that they've spent, to end it all for them in the space of 20 minutes. So there are different methods. A lot of the growers are tender-hearted. They're nature lovers. They're not just plant lovers. They care about the animals. They don't want to hurt them. And they'll take them away, and they'll trap them and take them away. But sometimes trapping them just isn't practical. Some of the animals are kind of wily, and
they'll just come
there have
right
been
back.
Growers who have, you know, tried to if trapping has failed them, they've tried to flood out a gopher hole. This was the San Diego grower who waged a war for 7 days. It was on an epic scale. He laid in waiting for this pumpkin with a gun to try to, you know, shoot it. This was a gopher, and he flooded it out several times. He waited with a shovel while someone tried to scare it out so he could pound it to death. I mean, finally did get it, I think, on his multiple attempts, and he finally drowned it. But it's they won't stop until they get that animal, because the animal could end their season.
Sure, sure. Well, Carmen's dad actually has a funny story of trapping a squirrel. Many squirrels. And one of those have a heart traps.
And then he relocates them. We call it the New York Squirrel Relocation Project.
Well, right. But what you're not mentioning, Carmen, is that he also spray paints their tails.
He does, with different colors.
So that if they come back, he knows, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sure enough, they come
he
back.
He can tell.
Yeah.
Do they, really? Oh. Well, these growers would transport them for miles, but I guess a determined animal that is homing back onto its territory could return. So they take that chance.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, Susan. But thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your book, Backyard Giants, and your love of pumpkins. Truly, you know, your explanation is just as...
And no trick-or-treater will ever look at a pumpkin again the same way. Thank you so much.
The book is amazing.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thank you for sharing it with us.
And thanks for listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Jack Inslee for producing, and to Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Welcome
back,
guys.
See you in the garden.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.